Welcome.
Hi.
How you doing?
Feudal Podcast.
Yes.
Ian's Feudal Podcast.
Apparently I take ownership. That's why I was the one that took blame for the loss.
Podcast. I never set it up like it was going to be a win. You set that up for yourself.
I did. I set it up. Set myself up real high so I could fall down real far.
We didn't win anything. You didn't win anything.
Mm-mm. Had it been a win, it would have been for all.
It probably would have been mine.
It would have been yours.
I would have found a way to make it mine, I think.
Of course. I think so. You make it yours. A lot of stuff to cover on the agenda tonight. Being a general podcast, we're gonna cover all sorts of things. I don't know where you want to start. You want to start straight up with spy movies? We got Quantum of Solace. I think I'd be a good spy. Because I don't give a shit.
I think every Bond by every actor has shown a certain pathology.
Of course.
We can talk about that.
Okay.
Sean Connery, the first Bond.
Yes.
Though many times called the most, like, not ever bland, but...
Most people
since
usually
it was
say...
the first one, the most straightforward. If you look very closely at his relationships and what happens in all of them, the guy's a sadist. He's a sadist who doesn't delight in the pain of women, but a few times has hit women, has shown a very mean streak with women, a very cold streak with them. He's generally very delightful. He's a gentleman. He's of good breeding, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Yet he shows this irascible streak of needing to commit primal acts of either violence or sexuality. To the point of sadism, especially with the sexuality.
Really?
I think that comes very clear with Connery's portrayal of the role.
I'm just thinking of a moment in Russia with Love when he's at the gypsy knife fight mm-hmm. between the two women.
Right.
And he asked the guy, you know, he's like, could you please call off the knife fight? And that seems kind of like that kind of goes against your take on the violence and whatnot.
I think it's just because it inconvenienced him.
Well, I didn't really at the time. He was just sitting there watching it, and then, you know, he just didn't want that to happen anymore.
Watch all of his movies in any order.
Oh, well, I've seen all of them.
Watch
them
again, you'll see what I'm talking about.
No, I know what you mean.
There's a sense of disdain for women in the whole thing.
Really?
By him, especially.
I think it's more of a misogyny, and most of the women that are in them are...
Misogyny is disdain.
Very, like, empty-headed. And,
it doesn't matter.
Or they're villains.
It doesn't matter.
You know, so you don't have respect for people that like are your enemies. Maybe you do.
They're not all those enemies, though. That's the thing. The vast majority of them are not his enemies, but he still treats them with disdain and misogyny because it's in his nature. And my theory is, it's because his portrayal is here's the thing about Bond that's always been very interesting, is that there's no indication about what motivates him or drives him. There's no indication. So. I'm sorry, Natasha, your hands are just naked behind you, and I'm trying not to look at it very much. This isn't a very good movie, but it's still got naked chicks in it, Amanda Peet, etc.
Yeah.
Each of them, since you don't know much about his past, except for very briefly told in various movies, he is an orphan. He was raised in a genteel society that taught him the finer things in life. He's an elitist by trade, almost. He comes across as cold and distant, very playful with people because he's so incredibly skilled at certain things.
He's a manipulator.
That make him valuable in this world of spydom, which is he's endlessly charming in all aspects, all characters that are all actors that portray him. He's always endlessly charming.
I disagree about the charming. I found the Dalton portrayal of him, especially in Living Daylights. He's completely frustrated with the Bond girl and that the Russian cellist.
I understand that, but that's a bump in the road. I'm talking about the overall thing.
Okay.
The Dalton portrayal almost doesn't count because it in no way his look, his attitude, which is d- despite his cold exterior, Dalton's attitude was very positive and cheerful in those two movies, for the most part. Like, he seemed to be treating people nicely, no matter what he did, despite how cold he tried to look. The best Bond portrayal was probably either by him, was probably either in The Rocketeer or Hot Fuzz.
One of those two. Good point.
But I mentioned Connery's. Moore's was more that it was supposed to have fun with the role, and it was supposed to be, it was someone who was...
Moore seemed way more snooty to me. Maybe he was very snooty. The accent.
He was more elitist, for sure, but he was also extremely accepting of anything that came across his path. He would experience it, and then he would throw it away if it wasn't worth anything. Mm. He was happy-go-lucky, as he stated recently, in opposition to Daniel Craig's portrayal.
Yeah.
He said Bond should be giggly and fun-loving or some crap like that. Roger Moore's 83 years old. He's a retard, whatever.
Yeah. All he ever did was that in that one JCVD
movie. I gotta say, I liked Roger Moore's movies. I liked all the Roger Moore Bond movies. I enjoyed him in all of them.
He's done so many that, I mean, it's like, you know, I liked View to a Kill because you got Chris Walken and Zeppelin.
Live and Let Die is one of my top three favorite Bond movies. No matter what else comes out new, I love everything about the stunts and the setting.
I liked Moonraker because of the space and the
lasers. Inherent racism in it. It's just great.
Yeah, Live and Let Die, inherent racism for sure.
Moonraker's stupid. It's very fun. It's very one of the most fun Bond movies, but it is retarded. It's utterly stupid.
Of course.
But anyway, his portrayal is one of like of this person who doesn't have any sort of pathological damage or anything.
I would say that in most all the Moore ones, and I was just thinking about this in analysis compared to the newer ones, even some of the like almost all of the newer ones, is that he's almost always on mission in all the Moore episode ones. It's like it's got the formula where at the very beginning maybe something happens and it's relevant to, it's a clue to a bigger thing.
M tells him go do this.
M tells him, okay, go check this out, and then he goes and he does that. And then, you know, he kind of, there's a couple bumps in the road here and there, right. But for the most part, he follows his mission. As opposed to what happens even in some of the Connery stuff, where he kind of drops out of the radar and goes off on his own. And
Daniel Craig's, too, have both been very much more memorable to Connery's, because it's less plot involved in terms of some big thing going on, and more him dropping off the map and doing his own thing, a little bit more, to a point. The Roger Moore stuff is interesting because the plots he's in, like The Man with the Golden Gun stuff, are much more interesting than most of the Connery things. The Connery things were mostly based off the earliest Ian Fleming books, which are less interesting than the crazy cockamamie ideas they came up for the Roger Moore stuff, because there was no more material to rip off.
So Ian Fleming was just taking what he knew about the Cold War and the way spy game really worked, and he was just trying to spice it up a little bit. He's like, well, let's throw in a little more sex and maybe a couple gunfights and some nifty, you know, mini cameras or whatever.
Moore stuff is where it paradoxically became more interesting and more off the map, like to the point where it wasn't really quite the same thing.
The supervillain thing really came. I mean, you had Spectre, you had Dr. No in the first movie.
It turned into a big franchise because of Roger Moore, I feel. Not because of him specifically, because of the movies he was in.
Well, and even so, in the last Connery, and before that you had in Her Majesty's Secret Service with Telly Savalas as Blofeld, and it was like the third appearance of him. Yeah. And I mean, in You Only Live Twice, which I think was right before In Her Majesty's, you had the Blofeld scheme with the thing that's been endlessly parodied, including in that Simpsons episode where the guys rappel down the inside of the hollowed out volcano base. And so it started to get more in that weird
range. You Only Live Twice had a really good theme song.
Oh yeah, that's a great one. Radiohead covers it.
Really?
I think
I might have heard that.
I think Bjork covers that. Radiohead does. Nobody does it better.
Nobody does better. I think Carly Simon.
I think they do it just to clear out the room at the end. Yeah.
Anyway. George Lazenby was. His portrayal wasn't good at all. And I think people give him way too much credit because it's the one that stands out from everything else because being so different, mostly because he was in just one of them.
Yeah.
His portrayal was not anything special. Nothing great. He was just more cocky than Roger Moore was.
I think
was.
The thing about that though is
the film was fantastic. Yes, the film was fantastic. It was this indie moment in the middle of the franchise that had nothing to do with Bond. It had nothing to do with his character until that moment where he actually became emotionally involved in the storyline of something. Yeah.
And cared about got married and all that.
Exactly. And they took the most risk with that. It was The Empire Strikes Back of the whole Bond series at that point. Timothy Dalton stuff, it doesn't matter. I completely just sweep it under the rug. Here's the thing I think about the Daniel Craig character. They gave him in Casino Royale the first actual, just by implications, by them actually explicitly mentioning his orphanage.
Mm-hmm.
His early orphanage and everything like that, and him having a conversation with Vesper Lynd, where they both, by things saying themselves about themselves, became obvious that they were the same about the person who was saying it. So it was obvious about both of them. It became very clear that he was someone who, instead of a pathology, had some sort of personality need to win. The ego thing, but to a point, like, and you can read it on Daniel Craig's face. That's why he's a phenomenal. I still at times question the choice of him because he looks nothing like it, he acts nothing like it, but his face and the expressions he gives reads so much more into the character than Connery or anyone who hit it with smirks and stuff.
When he doesn't get the result he wants, he's pissed for a second. And he takes a second.
He's furious.
And he shoots the guy. He shoots the propane tanks, and then he says, "Fuck it."
Well, one of the greatest moments I felt in the newest one, which had almost nothing to do with his plot, was when he first goes to wherever he's going in South America or something like that, and he goes to the hotel to try to find the guy who's the connection to the guy he got in the beginning. He immediately kills the guy.
Yeah.
And the look on his face is just like such dull, dead, like, oh, I had to do it. Like, he's looking, he looks around after he does it, like almost like he's looking for approval from someone like I had to do it.
He's checking to see if anyone notices, but I think he's a little confused because he stabbed the guy in the femoral artery. And so it's kind of, wait, what? Oh, I guess he's dead.
I guess
he's dead. Yeah. This is the attempt at realism that they're going for.
But his is, I recently put a review online. You didn't read it, obviously.
Well, I will read it.
You'll read it. What I said in it was that if those other people...
Wait, we got to stop. You're just throwing that out there. What is it? Forgotten Films WordPress?
What's the URL? It's the forgottenreviews.wordpress.com.
Okay. Yes. Is where we've got...
It's the forgotten.
Phenomenal written reviews from published writer.
Yeah, from published writer. So my thing was that all the other Bonds had a certain pathology, not so much more.
Well, do we want to just completely overwrite the four that Brosnan did? Because I enjoyed a couple of those. I did not like so much the last two.
Brosnan's were incredibly cold. His were incredibly cold, and I enjoyed them for the most part. He never once showed that he had any sort of enjoyment for anything that was happening to him. Connery showed that because I felt like his sadism was something he enjoyed. He took pleasure out of... almost like pleasure out of the death of the women he had banged or something like that. Nice. Which is really, I mean, I'm just reaching for that. That's not ever supposed to be shown. Yeah. But it felt like that because of his portrayal. The Brosnan thing was like he couldn't enjoy anything. He was doing what he did because he was like programmed to do it almost. I enjoyed his... I think GoldenEye is one of the best... is one of the top five Bond films for sure.
Mm.
I love GoldenEye. I think it's fantastic. Getting back to the Craig one, it's the first time they gave the audience the indication that this guy had an underlying motivation. Why did this person become the secret agent? Why did this person become so coldly efficient, as everyone says? And as they say in Casino Royale, he's a blunt instrument at one point. I feel like he's some sort of dog. He's like the...
He's the stray dog.
Something like that.
That's totally going on in both this and both Casino Royale. And even more so in Quantum of Solace.
He's this Rottweiler who's angry and has this need to, you know, you do anything to him and he needs to beat you. And he's like secretly, underneath all that, is eager to please the people who he feels he can trust and who trust him.
Exactly.
He has this extremely... maternal relationship with M, which was never apparent in any of the other films.
They just made her a woman, starting with GoldenEye, Or was it even Goldeneye?
It was Goldeneye.
Are you sure?
I believe so.
Okay, so
maybe she was the new MF. I don't remember, but
it might have been. It might have been the one after.
Either way, she was never anything more than someone who just chided him for stuff.
Yeah.
And as they've made her more of a character, which they made a point of doing this new one. I read some stuff about that.
They made a point of doing it a little bit in the first one, where you see her get woken up and she's in bed with her husband. You know, and this one they definitely did a lot where she's having a bath and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And they made it very important that their trust is a huge issue with both of them.
Oh yeah.
And when it becomes apparent that both of them can trust each other...
she kind of lets him do his thing.
Exactly. And he appreciates it to the point where he kills everyone who needs to be killed. And he's less robotic than Brosnan is. He's not a sadist. He's not happy-go-lucky. He's someone who has an underlying purpose at all times. You see what I'm saying? I think that's the one difference between these. And so, for that fact, I can appreciate... I think Casino Royale... I'm not going to say it was the best of all the films, like a lot of people say. It was one of the top couple.
I enjoyed it.
And it was probably the best movie in terms of, like, you know, if it wasn't a James Bond film, it still would have been a great film. This one was a James... This newest one was a James Bond film. And it was nearly forgettable, I think.
Really?
I enjoyed it immensely. I really enjoyed it. I think that a year down the road, I'm going to remember it as just another James Bond film, because there's nothing memorable about anything in the plot besides his personal character arc.
Well, I don't know. I here's where I'm going to disagree with you a little bit about this one, and probably agree with you too. I think one of the reasons that this one could be conceived of as being somewhat forgettable is that almost every Bond film has had like a, I don't know what the term it would be, but like an event or a thing organized around it, you know? There's some kind of unveiling or something. And usually it's half the time it's titular, you know? I mean, the obvious one, Casino Royale. It's a poker game. That's the big thing that is the event that like is sort of what draws you in, which is sort of where most of the activity happens. I mean, like in something like Moonraker, it's, you know, the moon base. In The Spy Who Loved Me, it's that underwater thing. In Goldfinger, it's the Fort Knox. There's like a place. There's a known kind of
theme, sort of.
Yes. Well, I mean, it's not always so much thematic, but at the very least, it's like an event.
Like the bad
guy's got this one thing he's going to try to do. I mean, sometimes it's this giant supervillain thing, and in some of them, I mean, like I said, I haven't seen From Russia with Love in a long time, but I remember
that's
it
a
being.
Great one.
A little less of a big deal. It's not like every movie is a world-ending thing. And in this one, you don't have that. You just have, you know, stuff is happening. The reason that I would have trouble calling it forgettable is because it's so completely connected to the last movie. It's essentially like a part two. And I mean, like I made a point of trying to watching Casino Royale just a couple days before going to see this, because I was like, well, I think there's stuff. There's a little bit of bleed over, and I wasn't sure how much. I just remembered that Casino Royale ended up with him shooting that guy in the leg and saying, "We need to talk."
Right.
And Quantum Solace starts with that guy shot in the leg. Yeah, like
an hour later.
It
literally starts an hour later.
And then it just keeps going, and it just builds on that. And so,
Mr. White.
Mr. White. I can almost let it go for it just being a story that starts to play out how some of this stuff is working. And it does a pretty good job of taking the huge gray area of international relations and spies and, you know, whatever you want to call it, the covert, clandestine operation of different agencies upon each other, and then seeing how one guy tries to navigate this to be a good guy, to at the very least sort of figure out what he's doing. And in that sense, I mean, I guess I kind of give it a pass. I don't know if it's necessarily forgettable because I mean, it was a big movie, but I mean, I see what you mean. I mean, if there's another 10 more from now and then it falls into
the, here's the forgettable thing about it.
For your eyes only kind of thing, where it's like, oh, there was a mountain that he climbed.
Here's the forgettable thing. By focusing on his continuing character arc and what drives him, which is admirable and wonderful for the character, what they do is they introduce a bad guy that has nothing to do with the last movie and what drives him. The bad guy has nothing to do with it. He's a bump in the road in this quantum organization.
Yeah.
This guy has his own thing, and he is, as the screenwriters and the director said, a real life bad guy, someone who is just, he doesn't have blood coming out of his eyes, he's not bald with a scar, mm-hmm. Doesn't pet a cat, he doesn't have metal teeth.
Yeah.
He's a regular business dude who has a front, who's just really greedy. That's a bad guy in the real world.
Yeah. Well, I think that you can connect...
But that's not interesting.
I think you can... For me, you're getting the character arc and you're getting the revenge plot that's going on in this, and you know that it has more to... Because there's the thing with What's-Her-Name is that she was essentially being held hostage by this group,
right,
with the money, and that's what ultimately led to her being killed. Right. And so, as far as I'm concerned, his motivation is to take the group down, and so you see that the group is this big.
Right.
And I mean,
But I don't feel that the bad guy they put in Quantum Solace.
Yeah, you don't really personally. You don't feel like
the Mr. White guy is the guy in the group. And what was disappointing to me was that they filmed extra scenes where he ends up killing Mr. White at the end of it that they decided to cut out at the last second.
Mm.
So if they're just going to throw this into the throw that into the beginning of the third one, whenever they make it.
I don't think they will. They might keep him as one of the main. You know, he might be the.
They should because this guy has been the link to why this matters to him. The thing is, though, they always also had at the end of this that he has kind of silenced the demons of revenge and stuff by letting her go or whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
But that doesn't mean that the organization isn't still a major thing for them
to
deal with.
And like I said, the smartest thing to do with him was give him a sense of motivation before they introduce the revenge aspect.
Yeah.
The revenge aspect of it doesn't come in until the very end of Casino Royale.
Mm-hmm.
So you've had a whole film already where it's this guy who doesn't want to lose, like the character in There'll Be Blood, very loosely. It's mm-hmm. somebody who has this sense of competition in him that no one else can win. And maybe it was just some sort of personality. It's something to do with him being an orphan, all this stuff, whatever.
Well, they mention his ego a whole lot.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
And it's great because it gives you a sense of this is how an actual person functions in real life. Whether or not he's an orphan, whether or not he has anything that caused him to do this as a child, it doesn't always have to go to childhood. It's somebody's personality flaw or something about them that has drawn them to a certain field and makes them excel in it. And when he's challenged at the thing he believes he does best, it ignites him.
Of course. When he's finally put into the big leagues. And that's sort of what Casino Royale was about. I mean, you know, the guy's essentially at the very beginning, right, that guy's really talking down to him, you know. If this was serious, they would have sent someone that mattered, you know. They would have sent a 00.
And he gets pissed and he kills the guy.
Well, he says, you know, oh, so you've killed somebody already, you know. Right. And they show that, like, he beat the shit out of the guy. Yeah. Like, it was a bar fight,
he
you know.
He brutally killed the guy.
And then the second one is like, yeah, considerably. Boom, you're dead. And then, yeah, they mention his ego a bunch. And to me, it's almost like what's great about it is that you've got him being a newbie in Casino Royale. And even in this, because like I said, there's almost no time.
Which gives him more to prove.
Which gives him stuff to prove. And he's trying to say, look, no, I'm doing this for duty. I'm doing this.
Right.
Which is sort of half true. But, you know, it's kind of like when everyone thinks that you're arrogant. And you're like, well, you have to have, like, confidence. And you have to have that, too. And it's like, well, I'm trying to just
navigate. What's funny is that when people call someone arrogant, it makes them even more eager to prove how awesome they are. That's
sort
the sweet
of,
thing.
Yeah.
So that you can prove your arrogance was
justified.
Justified, yeah.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that's always...
And so I thought that the chemistry of making him, of starting it over, having him, giving him something that he needs to prove, just like you said, like with anyone, whether he's got this whole, I'm an orphan, I'm an, you know, I need my ego, I've got a competition in me, that part's great.
Right.
But, like, either way, he's like, trying to show that he's good at this job and that he can do it, and
but he does have a specific goal in the second one, and I think that they did the absolute right thing with the Bond character. I have to think Paul Haggis had a lot to do with both things, and I applaud him for giving this sort of importance to the actual character and the complete and overall arc of this character. That's great. I just feel like the second movie built around this character arc wasn't as good as it could have been. I think I'm
inclined to somewhat agree with you, because there's a decent bit of convolution, and you don't kind of really get what you necessarily always want in a Bond movie, and you didn't really in Casino Royale either. You know, the funny thing about it is that the ostensible Bond girl for both of these, he never bangs in either of these movies.
Right.
He doesn't get with what's. Well, I guess he does at the end of Casino Royale.
Yes.
Yeah, but.
Before the fourth or fifth ending.
Yeah, exactly.
In this one, he does not.
In this one, he doesn't. And it's kind of like... they never really force a relationship between. They actually almost have like a more sincere common ground with this sort of revenge commonality that they.
I read a really interesting thing, which I don't quite agree with, about what the Olga Kurylenko character was supposed to be, which was, since Bond is so incredibly male in everything he does,
mm-hmm.
that she is supposed to be someone who is as single-mindedly revengeful as he is, and has her own goals and stuff like that. But she's able to voice the same things he feels, thus giving voice to his own feelings without him having look like a pussy, basically, because he's saying these feelingy things like, "Oh, it did all this stuff to me."
Like in some of the comic books I've been reading, where it's like, "Why didn't the old comic books like these tough guys talking about how they feel bad?"
It's because there's no other way to say it. Yeah. So you give a mirror to it in the form of a woman, which is still kind of misogynistic in its own 2008 way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of him beating a woman until she says it,
he hugs her and thinks about shooting her because she doesn't want to burn alive.
And he is incredibly kindly toward her. He really is. Like, because I think it is supposed to be like he sees him in herself. The part where, you know, the most touching moment they have is when he knows that she has this incredible fear of fire. She was burned mm-hmm. when her family was killed and all this stuff. The place is burning down around him, and she reiterates her thing about about killing her if he has to. So he's like, "All right, I'll kill you." And he pulls out his gun. And the last second, the wall falls down. He sees there's an oxygen tank or whatever it is, and he blows it up. And then they safely walk straight through the fire and fall out there.
You should have just done that, maybe. Yeah, I mean, there were a handful of off things. It sucks that they killed Mathis.
That was lame. That was a good character. Yeah, it's like when they, you know, here's the greatest thing about this reboot. They brought back the Felix character because I forget which one it was. In one of the Dalton ones, they killed off Felix,
they had his wife killed. You know, Robert Davi, drug dealer guy. Right.
Who was the guy who was eaten by the sharks?
And then he wasn't dead, though. They didn't kill him off. They just had him get eaten. Stupid. It was pretty stupid, though, yes.
Because he was supposed to be. Then he appeared
and then that was all. That was all revenge. No, Joe Don Baker was in that one. That was 6 years later.
Felix. He was supposed to be the Felix stand-in.
Oh, I guess he was.
You know what I mean? He wasn't Felix.
That's right.
That was the thing. They killed Felix.
That's stupid.
So by rebooting, you're like, you know what? That's retarded.
Yeah. No.
If sharks are going to eat Felix, there's going to be a note with a pun about getting eaten by sharks on his chest.
Something that ate him disagreed with him.
Yeah, something that ate him disagreed with him, which is a great pun, by the way.
Of course, yes.
Because you switch it just a little bit to the point where it becomes completely ridiculous.
Yes. Felix, I wanted more Felix, but every second of it was great.
It's good because
why I eat the peppers.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it felt like totally like old time, like in South America, like, smoking a cigar, like CIA guy.
Yes, and the thing that Jeffrey Wright does is so great is that in Casino Royale they made them seem almost too friendly toward each other toward the end. Like he was like, "Listen, you give us."
But that happened real quick. There was almost nothing,
and I'll bankroll you. And there's no sort of like butting heads at all. In this one, they bring it back that. This guy is a necessary evil, kind of, to the British, because, you know,
it's too easy to say,
"Hey, guess what? Big Brother is going to help us out and everything." Yeah. And so instead, you make it a necessary evil, and it's better because then Felix Leiter is this person who is always suspicious of everything, and he's always got this kind of like glaring look, but he understands that.
Yeah,
you know, he meets with Bond. He's like, "Dude, this guy is unstoppable. I think I'm gonna." Ally myself with him, you know.
Yeah, I'm bleeding chips. I think maybe I'll bankroll you.
But that becomes even more apparent in Quantum Solace because when he meets him in the bar, he like, you know, Bond is just like, "No, seriously, no BS. Like, tell me what I need to know right now." And he's like, "How much time do I have?" He's like, "I guess I'll tell you. You got 30 seconds." Yeah, and then he explains everything. Mm-hmm. He's like, "Get out of here." And then people come in and start shooting the place up, and he's just like relaxed,
drinking a beer.
Yeah,
it's great.
He drinks his beer. Yeah.
No. Yeah, I think I agree with you I almost feel like this is to bridge some kind of gap to
exactly
a third one where it'll be more of a like because the thing is, you know, I'm gonna call it Spectre because I like Spectre better.
Spectre, yeah. Quantum is Spectre.
Quantum, but they got to get into that more. And here's what another big problem I have is the ending where he drives the guy in the car. He goes and gets the guy and then drives him out. And apparently, this guy is he's one of the group members, and he folds. No one else has folded. They've established that this is such a crazy organization that, like, M's bodyguard for the last 5 years was part of it and turned. And then this other guy's willing to just tell him everything while he's driving him in.
I don't agree with that. Here's the reason. I think White would have folded if he didn't know that there was one of his guys standing right
it's
there?
It's possible.
Why would have folded? These people are all, they're human. They're desperate to live. They're going to survive first and deal with the consequences
they're
later.
They're upper crest types.
The Matthew Amalric guy, or Amaroich, or whatever his name is,
yeah.
He has no other options. He's in the middle of the desert. What's he supposed to do? He tells him what he needs to know so he can leave him alive.
But they don't.
The interesting thing
we
is
don't
this,
know what he told him.
Well, I know. It could be true. It could be not. It doesn't matter. The interesting thing is this, is that when M tells him that they found him with motor oil on his stomach, but they also found two bullets in the back of his
they
head.
They shot him.
Which means that they caught him in the middle of the desert and shot him after he was already dying of drinking motor oil, which is fantastically cruel and wonderful.
I'll bet you'll make it about 23 miles before you drink that. Yeah. Well, but that was to pay him back for the Goldfinger callback.
Right, exactly, the Goldfinger callback, which is cool.
When the little Daywalker got covered in oil.
And they do it in the second film, too. I think, was Goldfinger the second or the third?
Third.
It was the third, okay.
Yeah, Mr. Expert on Bond movies. It was Dr. No from Russia with Love.
I know about characters. You know order.
I know characters,
You're a
too.
Math person.
Yeah, that's right. Cold, mathematical. I don't know.
You're right-brained.
I have to give this movie a pass. I mean, more than a pass, because... So every now and again, for me, when I'm sitting there watching something, and a scene or a character action or something is just so great, I just enjoy the way it evolves so much. It happens, and I'm sitting there, I'm like, I figure it out, and I'm like, oh, this is great. And the opera scene.
The opera scene was wonderful. That was the best part.
He's just sitting there listening to Spectre, and he just busts him. He just calls him out right there. He's like, you guys should probably find a more private place to meet.
And then he waits for them to move. Yeah.
And I'm like, that is precise. That is beautiful. I just loved it. I just loved seeing these guys that think they're so great having their secret meeting out in the open. Like, no one... and it was just, I don't know, it was great.
And it was Tosca, which is one of the weirdest operas.
It was very, very strange.
It's really weird. It's the weirdest plot. And it's about revenge that goes wrong, weirdly, is what it's about. So I mean, obviously they did that on purpose. But the set that they did with it was fantastic. I felt that was the one memorable set piece they made that actually resonated in terms of what happened during it. The problem was that... Mark Forster and his editor, whoever it was, they didn't cut this film correctly.
I had some problems with a couple of actual spots where it was cut weird.
It was cut to the point where, first of all, the action scenes were confusing, which it was cut more like a Bourne film, which is always, I think, a bad idea. I think people gave those films way too much credit.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you.
But the weirdest editing choice was at the end of that Tosca scene, where they're running back through the restaurant that's there right in front of the things where all the people were getting their gift bags and stuff. It suddenly cuts to him running away, and suddenly the noise drops out, and some music comes in, and it's cut like this is supposed to be some slow motion thing where oh hey, there's some action's happening here.
Yeah.
But it's cut. It just drops into it. There's no segue into it in terms of editing.
Yeah.
It goes directly from him running, stomping on the stairs to suddenly some opera sounding music and slow motion cuts
and this sort of intercut between the opera with the sound.
Yeah, and it's very, I'm not going to say off putting, but it's extremely confusing.
It didn't quite work.
Exactly.
There was a few places with this where it didn't quite work. Forrester obviously had this fire, earth, air thing, and that was apparent because you had a boat chase and you had a land chase. You had them falling out of the sky and. The whole desert and everything. Another thing I'm going to remember, I think, from the movie is that weird resort or whatever. What the hell was that strange sort of modernist building with the fuel cells out in the middle of nowhere at the end of the movie?
Yeah, I don't know.
That just seems like something like
unforgettable. And the mention about the fuel cells was like a throw-in.
Yeah.
Something about, oh, that's just the fuel cells
that would motivate them to have the whole thing go up like it did.
Explode, yeah. And do you think that if that was that important, that would be something they would have mentioned earlier? Like, really? I mean,
location, or?
Something about the location to make it more resonant when it actually happens at the end and blows the hell up, because...
I don't think the location was what was relevant. It was just
it's
that happened.
Just location.
It was just a place to
place.
Set an action
it's
sequence.
It's an odd place out in the middle of nowhere that has something important as a fuel cell.
Yeah, I think it was just to show that it was, you know, this like compoundy maybe place where this guy was amassing his potential to coup. I don't really know. There was, like a lot of Bond movies, for me at least, the overarching plot, sometimes I kind of lose track, and I'm kind of like, in the middle of it, I'm kind of like, what the hell's going on? Right. I'm still sort of trying to figure it out.
It happens in a lot of them.
In a lot of them. And,
he follows loose strands and finds people who try to kill him.
That's and stuff doesn't... I mean, I think the biggest, to me, the biggest part that didn't... that seemed to just sort of die, kill the movie's pace and slow it down a lot, was the part early on with the Russian woman... And we first introduced the villain on that dock, yes. And then the guy shows up, and then the whole time Bond's just sitting there, like on a, like looking down right. The dock, and it's kind of, I guess figuring they kind of notice him, and he's kind of seeing, he's getting the lay of the land, and that part to me, it just the way it was put together, and it was trying to get out a lot of information kind of quickly, but
I also felt like they tried really hard to introduce the gadget thing back into it in a way that fit with their new look, which is not that some Q guy gives him these ridiculous things, objects. But that they have some completely unbelievable touch computer
square
thing
box,
that they can move onto the wall and stuff like that, which was cool looking. But it was like they were trying really hard to reintroduce the gadget thing back into appease diehards.
Well, I think that they had a little bit of that in Casino, but I think the problem is that they've got this like worldwide technology stuff that's all nifty right. And cool and touch screens and emails and send photographs and satellites this and whatnot. But you're right. They definitely do need to get to the hey, these are the practical things that you could wear on your person that you can use. You know, this watch has got a tranquilizer
and
dart.
Here's the thing: by giving this new Bond the personality they have, they've kind of completely eschewed any sort of need for him to have any sort of gadgets to get him out of messes, because he's so brutally violent.
He's the blunt
and
instrument.
When he gets pissed, he breaks whatever's holding him in and he beats people to death.
He pushes a guy through a window and pushes that guy off the building.
Oh, man. And the British guy.
And then he shot a guy at point blank and pushed him off a building. And then
he doesn't even defend himself.
He didn't shoot him.
He just doesn't care. He's well, you know what? I'm not going to defend myself because there's no point.
Yeah.
What's he going to say? I didn't shoot him.
Yeah, exactly.
I just pushed him to to what I thought was his death.
Well, it was like one story. I think the guy seemed fine, but yeah. I think one other thing that they did in this that you get back to the Connery, the sadist character.
Yeah.
Like so you, in Goldfinger, he's all charming and sneaks into Goldfinger's room and he's hanging out with Goldfinger's girlfriend and he's like seducing her, and then he gets the binoculars, he's like, "No, Goldfinger, start losing 10,000. No, 15, let's be generous."
Yeah.
And Goldfinger breaks the pencil. It's like one of my favorite scenes in all of Bondom. And then it turns out later that because she helped him out because he was all charming, she got covered in gold and was left for dead. Uh-huh. And he's kind of like, And he feels bad about it for maybe a second. But in this one, like, it's totally hammered home in a much more realistic sense. M's like, this woman was like a secretary. She was like an office worker. And we sent her here to have her do this one thing.
Right.
And you were all charming and you did this. And now she's dead. And for a bit there, he's actually, like, he goes with them. He gets, like, chained up. And he's sitting in the elevator for a bit there. He's almost like, like he's given up. It's discouraged him that he's like, I kind of drew her in and got her killed. And I mean, and he feels bad about Mathis too, but then he decides, it's the competition, it's the ego, it's the proving thing. And he decides, he knocks the guys out and he says, you know what, fuck it, I got to do this. And the great part about that is that it's like literally like a minute later, he's walking there and he just walks right into her and he sees her again. He's like,
and he tells her, he's like, listen,
I'm
going to
take care of
this.
So let's do it. I'm going to take care of this. I don't know. I really, I was hoping to enjoy it. I was looking forward to it. And I'd say I did. I probably will agree with you that it will be... There are less things that are specifically memorable about it. I mean, I'll always probably remember the opera part, just the way that seemed cool, because it's rare to get that many guys from Spectre together. I think in Dr. No, you had a bunch of them together at one point, because Dr. No was the head Spectre guy, and Blofeld was the second. But then Dr. No gets killed off in the first movie. You kill off the main bad guy of the organization.
I think what I meant was that you get individual... memorable things that happen in each one, whether it's a throwaway thing or not. You get, I mean, like you said, there's guys that rappel inside a volcano for some retarded reason.
From
Russia with Love, you have the
the blonde Russian guy. It's huge, played by what's his name from Jaws?
From Jaws, right.
Robert Shaw,
who doesn't know that you're supposed to drink white wine with seafood. And that's why he knows he's not a British agent.
Yeah, I guess.
He's like, oh, really? But they've got the thing where maybe it was in Dr. No. It was in one of the two. Here's the thing: that's like you remember moments, and not the movies, where they're running from the people on the boats, and they people shot the ropes holding the oil tanks, mm-hmm. and he shoots the flare to the oil tanks that blows up around all the boats. Awesome. It was either in the first or the second movie. It was mm-hmm. either in No or From Russia with Love.
It sounds like something from the second, maybe.
And you know, there's memorable.
Was it in Turkey? Because like Russia with Love had a lot of Turkey. That I remember. For me, the memorable moment of that is the quiet moment when the guy's like his contact. Like I don't know if he's like the hotel manager in Turkey. Or takes him to the underwater thing, and they get on the boat. I just remember that. That's just really cool, and like it's like an authentic.
That's the thing. There's stuff like that. Like a lot of the Moore movies have these incredible. Not just locations, but the things that happen in locations. They had locations in Quantum of Solace that were meant to look fantastic, and the things that happened in them were just not as memorable as they should have been.
Okay. That's what I felt. I'll give you that. I think part of it is it's just like you've done so many of these movies. At a certain point, it's like, yeah, okay, in Moonraker, they have that. In Brazil, there's some fancy museum, and they have this kick-ass fight. In The Spy Who Loved Me, there's the thing in Egypt, so you kind of remember stuff about Egypt. In Fear is Eyes Only, there's like him climbing a mountain, and that's actually a pretty like protracted sequence. I think it's like it almost like becomes like that's an exciting moment in a Bond story. It's like the mountain climbing one. In View to a Kill, you have the opening where he's snowboards, mm-hmm. which is cool. That was the first one I ever saw. So I have a weird place. You actually have his car get cut in half. View to a Kill's probably got the most crazy stuff happening.
Even in like the Dalton ones, like there's even the ones I don't like. There's like. Where,
well, the guy gets explosively decompressed and licensed to kill.
But there's the
one in launder the money.
The one in Living Daylights where they're going down the hill on the cello, or
the cello case, and it gets shot.
Like that. Yeah, that's retarded, but I remember it.
Well, the car in that one was cool. The car had like skis and stuff. I don't know. It was, but I think it's. We were trying to figure this out. This has got to be the longest going franchise, right? Easily, hands down.
Film franchise? Yeah.
I mean, even stuff that gets straight to DVD stuff, this is like, what, probably the 20th film?
It's the 22nd official.
See? And they all got theatrical release. So, I mean, that's like, you know, Leprechaun doesn't compete with that. You know, Saw doesn't compete with that. I think there's Jason doesn't compete with
there's
that.
There's some Japanese films that have as many, like the Zatoichi. There's a
there's Blind
like
30, Swordsman
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, there's like 30 of those, like different actors.
Those almost become like serials, though, don't they? Are really? I mean, like maybe kind of, are they
they're,
all
they're
like
all individual,
like a 90-minute at least
all,
feature?
Yes, they are.
Yeah. Okay.
So I mean, if you're talking about American films, and these aren't even completely American films, but I think they're financed by an American company.
I think maybe I'm just talking about it is a known action franchise.
Yes.
And so you. Almost everything has been done at this point. So the idea of reinventing the character, now it becomes like more interesting to get into what the character's doing. So I think your memorable moments are going to be more like, oh yeah, they had an explosion at this weird location, and I kind of remember that it was very modern and it was a lot of fire. I remember...
Well, think about like...
Dust and
for
water.
For instance, the Brosnan ones.
Mm-hmm.
They went to great lengths to make them in extremely interesting places and things that were very themed around.
Sort
they
of.
Tried in this.
The
but,
last
but the
one,
Bolivian,
Die Another Day, didn't work for me at all.
But still,
why.
It was set in some ridiculous, retarded thing.
An ice cave.
With an invisible car and retarded stuff that they did.
I really liked...
Goldfinger. Okay, let's go to GoldenEye.
Okay.
So, as boring as it sounds, setting it in like... Was it post Cold War? Was it still? I mean, it was
supposed
to be post.
That was the whole thing. Is there was a six? I think the longest gap between must be between License to Kill and Goldeneye.
It was
a 6-year gap or more. And so yeah, I think in that time or at the very least, I think by License to Kill maybe the Cold War pretty much ended.
But
Russia
stuff was awesome. That's the greatest thing.
With
about
the tank,
it, he's driving a tank through what used to be like
part of Russia.
It was still Russia. It was like it was the St. Petersburg or Stalingrad or something like that. And just you know the disdain they had for that sort of culture was fantastic. They put him in this thing, and Pierce Brosnan was at his best in that movie because he was still cold with the women and stuff like that, and treated them like you know James Bond's supposed to treat women and everything like that. But he. I don't know, there was just something about his delivery when it came to, like, the Russian guys. Like, mm-hmm. like he wasn't putting up with Russian guys.
No, he wasn't going to do
like,
that, yeah.
And then all the other ones, they, you know, the world is not enough. And
I like that one. I think Toronto that's my favorite Brosnan
stuff.
One.
Like, they put him in very interesting... Even the thing in China, which should not have been that interesting, became very interesting because they had him do interesting things in there. And it's a completely different culture. When you immerse him in a different culture, it's interesting. So by the Bolivia thing is fine, but the most interesting landmark or anything they could do was this blank, flat desert. And at one point, they fall into a big cave where they have a discussion and they climb out of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, they see the water. And I figured, did you figure?
Yeah, of course it was
water. It's Chinatown, James.
Of course it was water. Yeah. Of course it was water.
It's Chinatown,
James. So anyway, I just felt that, you know, they missed opportunities. I understand Forster's reasons for trying to make it a more realistic thing, but that leave that to the Jason Bourne stuff
Maybe.
And make it a Bond thing.
I don't know. I honestly, that's fine. So many people talked about how Bourne Ultimatum was a great action movie. Didn't we watch it together? I brought it over.
I love it.
And I was bored with it.
2.5, 3 stars. I don't know.
I was like, eh.
You make Mathew Amalric a regular dude, that's fine. Give him 3 butts or something. Give him something interesting that gives him reason to be so evil. Okay. You don't just be like, hey, how's it going? I pretend to be environmentalist just as a front because I want a bunch of money. Because
I'm a dick, yeah.
Boring.
Well, I'm part of this organization that wants to control things. See, I think it's just the tip of the iceberg with that. I think it's really just this organization is sort of the overriding, attempting to try and control the global market.
Another day had a dude who had diamonds embedded in his face.
I know. Remember that? I saw part of that on TV.
And another dude who had been completely
turned into a white guy. That movie was so stupid.
That was so dumb. And I remember it. I remember every single thing about it.
I forgot the diamond.
I remember that somebody chase him in a car and they shoot a rocket. And he's upside down, and he shoots the ejector seat, and it flips the car while the rocket goes under it. That's awesome. It's a stupid movie, and it's awesome. That's the awesomest part in it.
I think there was too much snow in those Brosnan movies.
He like parasurfs down a huge tidal wave ice explosion. Remember that?
Was that was in the world is not enough? Right?
The same one.
Oh, okay.
Same
one. My golly.
Yeah.
Now I don't know. I think.
He's an invisible car.
Yeah, I. What I liked a little about these ones, a little bit, and they haven't gotten into it too much. And occasionally in some of the older ones, is that there's a little bit more of like a mystery going on. Like he's figuring something out slowly, and it's not super ridiculous necessarily. You know, it's like in what was it? Die Another Day. It's not much of a mystery. It's just this ridiculous thing where this guy's been completely turned into another person.
Yeah, you know what's happening.
And it's another actor. And it's like, what? This just doesn't make any sense. I mean, I got to give it... Die Another Day, the thing I remember about that one is that it starts with him getting captured and then being in jail for 18 months.
Right.
Being in North Korean prison, being tortured and shit. And that actually seems like a character-changing thing to do.
Remember the part where Madonna is a...
Fencing instructor. That was stupid. Oh my god.
Hey, she sang the theme. Let's have her be in this.
She did.
They should have had Jack White be the bad guy.
It was backwards.
I
didn't mind the theme.
You know what's a weird one that always falls under the wayside but has a really weird plot is The World Is Not Enough.
I like that one.
Which...
With the newspaper conglomerate. With the Murdoch.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about...
Oh, The World Is Not Enough is the one with the chick.
Yes.
And
Robert Carlyle is the bad guy who has the bullet slowly going into his brain so he can't feel pain.
Uh-huh.
At the end, Pierce Brosnan pushes that bolt from the submarine and it just completely punches through his body.
Uh-huh.
And he can't feel it. He's just like, ah. And he just kind of slowly dies. And that guy is so twisted and crazy because he's driven by this like... I want somebody to kill me because I can't feel anything, and this is going to eventually kill me anyway.
Let's see.
And then they've got the Sophie Moreau character and the completely hateful, vapid, empty Denise Richards character,
mm-hmm.
who's only in it so they can use a pun, Christmas comes twice a year at the end of it. But that has some interesting stuff about the oil pipelines and yada yada and Bill Clinton.
Organizing.
It's an oil pipeline thing. It's the Bill Clinton administration, basically.
Yeah.
We're not going to join any wars unless there are oil pipelines involved. We'll jump right into them. Send some NATO guys out there.
Indeed.
Anyway.
I'd give it an A- or a 4 stars out of 5.
Talking about Quantum of Solace.
For Quantum of Solace. Because I really got a kick out of him busting Spectre. because he, I don't think he ever got to do that in any of the other movies.
I like
and
that.
And I'd been waiting
for that. I like
that
a lot. That said, I give it a B at the highest. Okay. It's B or B minus to the point where it's three or five stars, whatever we would normally say.
I mean, maybe it's because I'm analyzing it based on Bond movies and not just based on movies.
I'm taking it as its own thing. I might be comparing it too closely to Casino Royale.
I think I'm giving it too much credit because it's just like part two to Casino Royale.
I understand
and
that.
I'm seeing it like
I
a trilogy
like it's
where
the
it's
same,
the Empire
it's the
Strikes
same
Back.
Story
where,
that's being followed through. I just feel like compared to that first one, it's just, it's this pale shadow of...
I almost don't want to judge it till the next one's come out. If it's gonna, but you don't get the impression too much that, like, you get the impression, like you said, that he drops the little knot, the Algerian love knot or whatever in the snow and says he's done with that.
Right.
And so you kind of get the impression that at least that part's done. I don't know. Was there a secret ending? Matt and I just took off and left.
No.
Matt liked it. I saw it with Matt.
Right.
And he thought it was good. So I give it a, you know... a fair assessment. Never say never again. If you like spy movies, I think it's
it's not just here's the thing about James Bond stuff. They're not really spy movies.
That's kind of true.
People call them they're not. Any other movie about spies are generally based on something at least kind of real or someone who was writing books that were supposed to be a more real version of the James Bond thing since Ian Fleming was so popular to begin with.
Mm.
James Bond is a huge caricature that has become a serious thing.
Yeah.
And it really never should have, but it's become its own living, breathing thing that's a massive caricature of things that should never happen. The one thing I always think of is in the one Roger Moore one, I forget which one it is, he's in Vegas or something.
You think in Vegas, that's Diamonds Are Forever, that's Sean Connery.
I don't think Roger Moore ever went to Vegas. And there's not Joe Don Baker, but somebody else, the other guy. The guy who was in Walker, Texas Ranger.
Noble Willingham?
Yeah, he's in one of them. And the guy's like niece or something like that. That's not the same one. That's another niece. There's a bunch of nieces that bang Roger Moore.
I don't know. I like his portrayal. I'd been waiting for a guy that was a little more... just kind of mean. Because most of the stuff that happens in the movie, like, or in the Bond movies, usually you're dealing with these really cocky, like, powerful guys that think they're so great.
Yeah.
And Bond's approach is usually just to be kind of arrogant and a little cocky back and kind of wry. I mean, Bond kind of, to me, feels like he's Wesley from Roadhouse.
I don't think mean is the issue. They're all mean, but the way they go about beating anyone in a fight is completely different for each one.
Yeah.
Brosnan seemed like he was like touched by an angel and everything to the point where like it was almost lucky.
Yeah.
Dalton was just like
he was just sort of this like I'm a Mary Sue badass.
Connery seemed to like
he had to get gruff and be brutal.
He did, but he generally like just I don't know, got lucky or something. And then Moore was like almost like disarmed everyone by being looking so foppish and stupid.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Oh, what do you smack him on the back
judo
of the head?
Chop.
Yeah, right.
He's just going to suck air from a tire in the bottom of the lake for a while and chill.
Yeah, I think Moore had probably the greatest number of great puns, too, in his...
Oh, I don't... But Connery's were
Connery
so
had some,
great.
Had
like
some great ones. Some of his were really, like, cruel.
He throws that guy into the bathtub, and he throws that chick into the bathtub in the beginning of Goldfinger, and electrocutes her, and he's like, it was shocking. And he walks away, and it's like, that's awesome.
Yeah, his are pretty good, but Roger Moore's were, like, way more sexual in nature, and... It was disturbing, but like always really, because like, if you think about the type of person that would be this kind of like, this dandy Englishman super spy secret agent who bedded women and was able to murder people by just kind of like raising an eyebrow and like straightening his tie, and then would say these ridiculous, retarded puns that had everything to do with being sexual in nature or not, like... You almost get killed by a huge guy with metal teeth, and as soon as it happens, like your first response is to straighten your tie and say something about being bitten to death. You know, like he did that in like three of them, I think. Yeah. Every time Jaws showed up, there was some sort of pun about being bitten. I don't know. And some of the bad guys had some good ones too. I think
there were some decent
puns by some bad guys too. Actually, I was reading something once that was pointing out the greatest number of puns, especially from the bad guys, seem to be on the heels of things that happened just so they could put the pun in the movie.
Yeah,
you know, it has nothing to do to indicate anything about the character. Like you've already seen him brutally murder someone. Mm. The second time he brutally murders someone, it's just so he can say a pun.
Exactly,
which is wasteful. Wasteful yeah. filmmaking.
What about the money? Launder it. Yes, and a little, and then Wayne Newton. You forget Wayne Newton was in.
Oh my gosh,
License to Kill. And
stupid.
There was a handful. I think. You're right. I think if you analyze all of the movies, you can probably think of a memorable thing between almost all of them. I remember
the Dalton ones even, you know, like really yeah. clearly and think things about them.
There's well, the Dalton one was, Living Daylights was all about Afghanistan. It right. kind of slowed down at that point, right. but it had, the beginning, it was the only, was it the only one where it's in Gibraltar and it's like they're doing a training exercise
right.
and things don't quite go well.
Well, you remember, the one with Shaw that you mentioned earlier starts with like that 10-minute long sequence where there's like they're chasing the Bond that's just a guy in a Bond mask and Shaw kills him.
Yeah.
And there's like people training to kill James
yeah,
Bond.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah, exactly.
That was
really
awesome.
Weird.
And that was started for so long without Bond being in it. They mostly don't do that. Usually start with something happening immediately
with
that
him.
Bond is involved yeah. with or something happening very quickly that he follows up on.
Well, that was the second movie. That was from Russia with Love. And in the first movie, Dr. No, Bond doesn't show up for a bit. He's not in the beginning part. I think there's, you know, what I remember about that one is just the island stuff. It was very tropical. Mm-hmm. I don't remember a lot of other locales for it. And Dr. No had like a metal hand.
Yeah, right, right. That was obviously way longer than his other arm.
Yeah, exactly. With Goldfinger, of course, you remember the laser.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you want me to talk?
I always remember Fort Knox.
Well, you remember Fort Knox and you remember Odd Job.
Yeah.
You remember the Vichy's at golf?
I always remember Pussy Galore.
Pussy Galore. Oh,
them rolling around in the hay in Kentucky.
Yes, that.
Literally rolling in the
yes,
hay.
Yes, literally rolling in the hay in Kentucky. Yeah. The fact that Goldfinger gets sucked out of a plane by like a pinhole, and that's awesome. They didn't
which,
have...
Which one had Chu Mi in it?
I don't know.
That has got to be the worst James Bond girl name. I mean, the best, but the worst.
Of course.
Chu Mi.
And we had Strawberry Fields.
Strawberry Fields was pretty
was
good.
Pretty good.
Pretty good. Of course, you never hear Strawberry until you look
you know,
it up online.
You don't. Or until you
just,
see
just
it
Fields.
The
she
yeah.
says just Fields.
I think that I like that better, that they keep that stupid Bond tongue-in-cheek thing, but then they don't completely
they keep
let
it, but
out.
They don't explicitly state it. So
turn, like, yeah. wink to the camera about
right.
it. Though I felt like it was very weird when you first see her, she's got the trench coat on, and it looks like she's not wearing anything else underneath the trench
coat.
It's
supposed to look like that.
And
I think it's supposed
seemed
to.
Weird,
yeah.
but whatever.
She was pretty hot.
She was very hot.
Not real redhead.
I don't care.
Not real redhead.
It doesn't mean anything to me.
Because you're so cold.
I'm so
and
cold
methodical.
And methodical, just like Bond.